All right, Huma, welcome to Money Bites. You have a very interesting career journey that spans multiple countries. Can we start off with where you started your career?
Yes, my educational background is actually from Pakistan. And I did my engineering in computer science from there. I did my master's in computer science. And then I went on and started off as a lecturer of programming. And I was also teaching some advanced topics like artificial intelligence and graphics back in 2013. And then I felt like, I need to study more. And also I had this feeling of, I wanted to do research and PhD. So I applied to the US. I got into a program called Engineering Education at Purdue University, where I use my computer science skills and also my educational background and experience.
That's amazing. What got you into computer science in the first place?
So actually, when I was in high school, I wanted to do majors in English literature.
Oh.
Very different than computer science. So I had, but my father, he wanted me to pursue a career in accounting.
Uh-huh.
So for a few days, we were having these conversations around, okay, now you're going into like college, and what do you actually want to do? So college is actually high school in my country. And that's where you decide which subjects you're going to pursue. Is it going to be arts or science? So there are like four to five different combinations you can take. So my dad was like, go for accounting. And I was like, I want to do English literature. And then after 10 days, we were sitting and not agreeing on one of them. So my dad was like, okay, let's not do accounting, but also let's not do English literature. Why don't you go for science? Because you're so good at, tech, and you explain me everything, and you already know how to, do programming at this age. So why don't you think about it? And then I thought about it, and I was like, yeah, I can do that.
Oh wow, that's amazing. So let neither of us get what we want and go down a third round.
Exactly. So it was like a win-win for both of us.
That's amazing. How
Yes.
did you find computer science once you got into it?
So, because my high school was all girls institute, there were no boys. So I found a couple of girls who were like really good at programming, and our interests really matched. And we were always, like competing with each other to write a program and who wrote it more efficiently. And then I think I was also very fortunate to have an instructor who was very supportive and always challenged us that I felt like I can do this. I'm really good. Like I kind of felt like I'm in the top 5% of my class.
Wow.
And if I pursue this field, I can do really well. So that was something which kept me going towards computer science.
That's amazing. And then you came over to the US. You also worked in the US for a while, and you've also worked in Pakistan. What do you think are some of the cultural differences?
In Pakistan, I've worked in academia. I haven't worked in the tech industry. And then in US, I have worked in academia and also the tech industry. So I have experience in startups, in large scale companies, and also academic settings. So I think two I can really compare are academic settings. So one thing I've seen in Pakistan is that where I taught and where I studied myself, they were all girl institutes. And here in US, because I have experience at co-educational institutes or big universities. So I have seen, men with women in these computer science engineering classrooms. So that is one difference I've seen. And I see that women in US are actually a little bit less confident than women in Pakistan. And one reason is like the harmful comparison they do with the male peers. Just because the male peers coming in those classrooms have AP computer science they have done, and these women did not do those courses. So when they sit on the same table, they're thinking like, oh, these boys, they have more programming experience. They know how to write programs and we don't know. So are we, you know, at par with them? Should we learn more? So they, a lot of them are sitting in a very confused stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then I do feel like overall, even in Pakistan and US, women lack this confidence that they can do programming. And I think that comes way back from school time. You know, they're kind of taught they're not good at maths, they're not good at physics, or they can't excel in these fields because they are mainly male-dominated fields. This I have seen like both in Pakistan and US, that women generally feel that these fields are male-dominated.
Gotcha. Interesting. You did your PhD thesis on this.
Yes.
Do you feel that in your thesis, you mentioned something about the computational identity.
Yes.
Do you feel that this is because, as you mentioned, the women are coming in with less computer science oriented learnings from their background, or is there an actual gender societal issue here?
When you look at your identity, any kind of identity, three pieces make it. So the first piece is interest, the second piece is recognition, and third is skills. So you can say skill is programming and, you know, doing maths or performing good at calculus. So all of those things are skills, right? Mm-hmm. And then recognition is someone coming and telling you, you're really good at programming, you're really good at calculus, or, you know, just me, myself, believing that I'm really good at something is recognition. And then interest is, okay, I have free time. I like doing programming. Let's do programming. Let's do calculus instead of, you know, like doing something else. So all of these three components always make our identity in anything. So if you say you have a physics identity, you have interest in physics, others recognize that you're good at physics, and then you have like all these skills to perform physics on a real world problem or something. Women are not recognized. So even if they do have the skills and the interest, if someone is not, you know, telling them that you're good at this thing, you should pursue it, they feel like they don't have this identity. So being recognized as someone who's good at computer science really builds your computational identity. And that's what my research is on.
Taking a step back, do you think young girls have the interest to begin with? Or is that something that needs to be better fostered?
I feel like that if you give same opportunities to male, female peers, they would develop the interest.
Mm-hmm.
But same opportunities are not given from very young age. If you look at some studies about using STEM toys at very early age, you will see that most of these toys are being bought for male sibling, male child, and there's a big difference in the percentage when it comes to buying these toys for them. So only 7% of the STEM toys are being bought for girl child.
You also mentioned in terms of recognition being super important of a girl maintaining her interest. What do you think made your father and your high school teacher unique in, you know, believing in you and fostering you and pushing you towards that direction? How can we have more of your father and high school teacher?
So my father was always very different than the cultural father we have in Pakistan. He always, you know, looked at what interested me. And he did not like look at the society we were in. So he was not, he was like, okay, if you like doing maths, let's do maths. I'll get you, you know, all the books, all the resources you want to. So he was more attentive towards my interests rather than, you know, deciding a career trajectory for me. And he was always, you know, very willing to be on the table to talk about my interests. Like even in high school, he wanted me to do accounting, but then we were sitting on the table and talking about what are the good options for me. So I think two things, being attentive towards your child and their interest. And the other thing was, you know, being open to conversation and change.
Mm.
My high school teacher, she herself was very interested in programming.
Mm.
So she became kind of like a role model for us, that if she can do it, we can also do it.
Do you think there are systematic changes that we can put more of our resources to accelerate more women in STEM?
So, yes, I feel like there are systematic changes which need to come from personal level as well as from, you know, other entities. There's a lot of media culture which needs to be changed around these computational identities. Like whenever you see a techie, you have these stereotypes in media around them that, you know, this person has obsessive working hours, the dresses in a hoodie, has a certain kind of like, you know, appearance, where they're not expected to wear like a suit and a tie. So all of that, you know, plays in our mind and we think like, are we like that kind of person who we are looking in the media? And if we don't resonate with that person, we feel like, okay, this is not the identity we want to have, even if we have interest and skills. So media needs to bring in a change. Then there are change at, you know, every level which needs to be done. Like women need to be more confident. They need to believe more in their own abilities. Men need to support women, either if they are fathers or brothers or your peers or colleagues. And then even I think mothers and grandparents have roles to play. Like if your mother is telling you, you can do it, all women can do it, then you go for it. If grandparents are buying, you know, STEM toys for the male child in the family and not for the female child, that also brings in discrimination at very early age. So mm-hmm. I feel like in whatever role you are in the society, you have a part to play in bringing women to tech.
You feel in your own experience, so you came to the US for your PhD and mm-hmm. you also worked, as you said, in startups and bigger companies, etc.
Mm-hmm.
You feel you had the support that you needed, or did you actually experience missing the support?
So I feel like I was supported in my household and by a lot of my instructors. It could be that I was lucky or I was raised in this environment which really supports and boosts my confidence. I also feel like my own personality, I have a little bit of more reliance and confidence on myself, where I believe more on self-recognition than recognition by other people. But as I stepped more into the field, you know, there were problems and there were barriers and barriers of different kind, I felt. And then I felt like, okay, I need to remove these barriers for the other women in the field.
Mm. Can you give an example?
When I got married, or, you know, when I was single, I had more time on the weekend. So I was going to these work meetings or resolving issues, sitting on weekends. So my management was very happy with me. They were praising me in weekly meetings. They were saying, oh, she comes even on weekends and she resolves problems, so we want employees like her. And then at that point, I didn't think much about it. But once I had my son, life kind of changed. And, you know, I was not available over the weekends to do these meetings. And I had a very limited time frame I had to work in. For example, the nanny was only coming like 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. So I had to manage all my work in that time. So once I went back and things were changed, I felt the environment was not as supportive because they wanted me to come in these extra meetings and I was not available. So I felt like what I was doing earlier was maybe not a good strategy, or women should not be like, you know, giving time on their weekends, even if it is available or free. So I learned that the hard way. And my management by that time was expecting that I would be doing that. my performance was evaluated based on my availability instead of my skills. So when I got my performance review, there were things which, you know, a lot of things really were based on my availability issues.
Mm.
So even though if I was completing my work or resolving the things, they were expecting more from me because I had more availability before becoming a mother. So if I was working on weekends earlier and not now, my performance was being evaluated on that availability too, when it's not actually a part of my job to go and work on weekends.
Yeah.
Especially the topic of maternity leave and parenthood, it really affects women more than men. It's not just, you know, like culture and setting expectations. It's like understanding that the other person is in a very different situation. Like if I'm a mother, I'm sole responsible for my child, kind of, because there are a lot of things which only mothers can do and fathers cannot do. Breastfeeding is one of them. And the tech culture in Bay Area or other big cities, they don't support like breastfeeding breaks. And if you know, and then they don't give you enough of paternity or maternity leave. So fathers have it even less than the mothers, where I think it is unfair for them because they are also trying to take on equal responsibility of the child. And fathers get just like half the time. Then the average time in Bay Area to get a maternity leave is 6 weeks to 8 weeks. And that's not even enough to fully heal your body and have bonding with your baby. Whereas like other countries like Norway or Europe, they have really good policies around parental leave. So mothers get at least like 6 months to 1 year. So I do feel like US, when it comes to the paternal leave system, is really giving less time and put asking you to put excessive work, so work hours as parents.
You feel there are things that we as employees can do to surface this to in the discussion with our employers?
I remember I went in a negotiation meeting about my maternity leave with my manager and higher management. And
oh,
then
you had to negotiate your maternity leave?
Yes, because at that time I was working in a startup and they did not have like any concrete policies around what should be the maternity leave. So they were building a policy around it and they wanted to take my perspective into it. But it really came down to, okay, what is the average maternity leave in Bay Area? And they just wanted to match that. So the good average maternity leave time in Bay Area is 4 months, which is 16 weeks. And then it just came down to those 16 weeks. I feel like, you know, these policies should be made on case-by-case basis, depending on, you know, your employer and what kind of situation they are in or what kind of medical problems or emergencies can occur. So there needs to be a more descriptive policy. Instead of saying that, okay, you're going away for 4 months and then you have to come back. So things need to be more flexible around that because you're having like a life change.
Yeah.
And then also there are payment issues. So if you're working for a startup, they're usually not paying you anything during your maternity leave.
Oh, wow.
And then the California government gives you like, I think it's 40 to 50% of your salary for 2 months out of those 4 months. So if you're a woman, you're really suffering with respect to the budget because your company is not paying you or giving you a paid maternity leave. And then the government is also, they know if the policy is, if women are out for 4 months, they're only paying you for half of that time and even half of that salary.
I did not know about this.
I didn't know until I became a
mom. Yeah, I think that's one of the big issues, in that until you have a child, this you just assume the company will take care of you, and that's not the case. I think many of us are also learning through these massive tech layoffs that the company is not going to take care of you.
I know a lot of women who were laid off during their maternity leave.
I saw that too, yeah.
But it's not like legally allowed. And then if you want to fight back against the company for doing something illegal, you are kind of rejecting your severance pay. So you're saying, I'm not going to sign off the layoff contract, and I'm not going to take the severance pay just because I have to fight against the company for laying me off during a maternity leave.
Oh, you feel we're improving, or are we at a stalemate, or are we regressing?
I think we are like at a still spot where we are not regressing or not improving in terms of, the maternity leave policies. I was told, like, when I was going on maternity and I negotiated that, I wanted my pay because you're legally required to give me the maternity leave. I was told that, we pay you a lot and then we need a replacement for your work, and we are also going to pay the replacement. So we cannot take that much of expense.
Mm.
So these are the kind of arguments companies are giving in Bay Area to women. So this is not called support or inclusion or diversity. So I feel like we are in still water when it comes to these kind of policies, and this needs to be revised.
It's really interesting how you mentioned diversity, because it's absolutely true. The culture in a lot of these tech companies seem to be diversity. It might not have been resolved, but at least we're starting to talk more about race diversity and, age diversity and whatnot. But in terms of family diversity, that's a really good point.
Yes.
In our pre-interview, you also mentioned the lack of support when you returned as a mother. What was that experience like?
So the first thing was going by the paper, that if I was granted 16 weeks, there's a fixed date I have to come back on. And I felt like that should have been negotiated based on, whatever the company is going through or what I am going through. So if the company wanted to extend the leave, they could. But if I wanted to extend the leave, it was not on the table. So it felt very one-sided going back.
Hmm.
And then there was lack of support. Like, I was using childcare for my son. And then I told you, like, it was 8 to 4 p.m. and I had to do all my work and meetings in that time. So my manager knew my situation, but still there were meetings, scheduled at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., which were to be done and were urgent. So I felt like I was not being taken into consideration.
Mm.
I also felt like I went back after 4 months. There were a lot of changes which already happened, and I was just like briefed in one meeting, whatever has changed. And then I was expected to, understand everything which has changed within a week based on one meeting. And then whatever mistake happened when I was on my own mat leave, I was expected to resolve it within a month of coming back. So I felt like there were a lot of unreasonable expectations. And I felt like, I was not supported enough. I should have been given more time to understand.
It's interesting because onboarding, I think, is different from reboarding in a sense. And yeah, no, I can definitely understand the anxiety and the frustration that it can take when you're trying to adjust to this whole new family dynamic, but at the same time, you do want to perform well. You do want to prove that, hey, I'm coming back and I can perform at the level before I left, but just physically, mentally, like everything has changed.
Yes. I think like the two systems are so much like different from each other. I didn't know a lot of things about bearing a child. Like I didn't know they don't sleep until 7 or 8 months. I didn't know a lot of things. And when I went back, I was telling my manager that I didn't know all of this. And still, you know, I felt like even after hearing all of my issues and on what kind of timing and mental state I'm functioning at that time, it was not taken into accountability.
What do you think companies could do better? What's fundamentally missing? Wait, before even I ask that, were your managers mothers and fathers? Like, were they parents themselves?
No.
Do you think the lack of that experience played into the lack of potential empathy?
Yes, to an extent, because the people who were already parents kind of resonated with me and were, you know, more empathetic towards my situation versus my team. So my team had no parent at all. And I was the first parent in my team. So I felt like, you know, they're in a very different, just a very different setting in their life where they don't understand I'm coming from. I kind of feel like, you know, companies need to have these mental health resources where they have at least like a psychiatrist or someone who can talk to and resolve these work-related issues. Like if my personal life is affecting my productivity at work, I need someone to talk to. Maybe I'm not 100% comfortable talking to my own manager about my mental health issues. So just having those kind of resources for your employees, being more empathetic towards them and trying to understand, you know, their situation or like why a problem arised would really help.
Yeah, absolutely. This isn't necessarily just a women's issue. You mentioned very validly that it's not just a maternity problem, it's a paternity problem as well.
Mm-hmm.
So just that diversity and empathy, the need for that, unless we're saying all of the Bay Area culture and sort of tech culture is against increasing our family. yeah, definitely a lot of work that's still needed. And it seems that experience has propelled you to the next adventure in your life. Can you share more about what you're up to these days?
So after my full-time job, I started working as a mentor for women in tech because I know, you know, I have these managerial skills and also tech skills, which can help other women excel in their fields. So I'm working with an org called Women in Tech. It's in SF and currently, so they give me every 3 months, they give me like two different mentees, which are women either doing a job in startup or a big scale company. And then I kind of help them with whatever issues they're facing. So if they want to improve their communication or build more network around them or just, you know, improve on any of the skills, I kind of help them get the resources they need and also give them encouragement that they can do it. So that's more of like a half-time job I'm doing. And it's very flexible because it kind of works for my schedule. I can do like parenting and focus on childbearing. At the same time, you know, also be in field and help other women achieve their goals. I'm doing some research with Stanford. I'm also thinking about starting my own startup where I'll be working on content for toddlers, because right now a lot of content on social media or just media, it causes a lot of learning disabilities. So we need content which is more focused on that the toddlers or, you know, children can develop healthy milestones instead of, you know, going into learning disabilities. Because if you specifically see US, more children have learning disabilities than in other countries.
Do you mean there's more learning disabilities in the US?
Yes.
Oh.
If you look at the stats, US has a higher number of children who have learning disabilities as compared to other countries.
Is it the fact that there's absolute number, higher absolute number, or is it the fact that there's more children that are diagnosed?
It could be that more children are diagnosed, but other reasons behind learning disabilities are, you know, giving more screen time to children who are under two. And because, you know, a lot of technology and screen time is available in US, and parents work so much that they just like put their child in front of TVs or screens or tabs. It's also genetic, right? So if you give birth to a child after 35 or so maternal age, then there is a higher chance of being of having a learning disability. And just because of the work culture in US, women are more, you know, they want to settle more into careers and give birth after 30s, 35s, which is not the case in other countries. So I think like all of this society pressure and working environment plays into it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to do my part where at least, you know, the things we have control on, which is the content being shown on these screens, does not cause learning disabilities.
That sounds like an amazing mission.
Thank you.
Do you think in your own startup, what would your maternity and paternal policy would be if you had sort of full say on it?
I have seen, honestly, like based on my other mother friends and peers and my own experience, I would say a policy which is 1 year break from work would be really great. And I would be willing to do that for my employers, just because, you know, I have been through the situation and I understand that if you're not functioning 100%, if you're not like physically fit or back in your shape, if you're not mentally back in the space you were, you cannot perform 100%. So I would give them at least 1 year and trust on their abilities.
That sounds amazing. Pay it forward.
Yes.
Love it. Thank you so much, Huma. This was a really good talk.
Thank you. I'm glad you called me.
Awesome. Looking forward to hearing more about your startup when it comes to the market.
Thank you.